So we're recording now. This is Daniel Four. It's sometime in July 2018, and this is an open space to support folks in asking whatever is helpful to you in your practice around relating with the ancestors. And I would invite people, even as I say a few opening words here, to please send your questions in the chat if you would. And know that I am recording, and so if you choose to ask a question through taking it off mute or kind of raising your hand, which is actually a Zoom option, then what you say will be recorded just for others' enjoyment later. But my preference is that your questions would drive the time. So I'm going to begin to monologue until some questions come in. For context, because some folks are new completely to where I'm coming from, I wasn't raised with any kind of framework for relating with the ancestors, but it's been a conscious and important part of my spiritual practice and just work with life and the spirits since the late 90s. And so it's been 20 years or 19 years at this point that I've been consciously directly relating with my own ancestors of blood. And some others as well, but especially those ones. And I've written a book on that. I train other people on how to do that now as of the last few years, after mostly doing that just myself for about 13, 14 years. And yeah, so it's a big part of what I'm up to. And there's so much that could be said that I would rather follow the lead and the questions of you all. I'll say that there are trainings in this work that others are guiding who have trained, and those are happening in Olympia, Washington, in Berkeley, California, in Ottawa, Ontario, in Asheville, North Carolina, in Santiago de Chile, in Michoacán, in Guadalajara, in Mexico, and in Melbourne, Australia. Those are the ones scheduled right now. And there's also a online course that's happening soon. Starts later this year. But mostly there's about, 40, 45 people on this call. So I assume you tuned in because you have some curiosity, at least, if not investment, in relating with the ancestors. And think of the most interesting, alive, edgy, relevant to your life question you can think of and type it in the chat. And then the time will be more dynamic. It helps me as a teacher to have something to log on to like that. So great question from Raquel. And others keep it coming. It's saying you started a simple ancestor altar, has read part of the book that I wrote. It's a book named Ancestral Medicine, if you want to search about it. It's on Amazon and all that. And you're excited to connect in person. And I've suggested not to use photos with living relatives. Why not? And that you have photos and don't want to cut out or fold photos of your family. Great. So there's a couple different things here. It's a great question. This is a thing that was shared with me years ago in the context of Lukumi or Yoruba traditions in the African diaspora. And it stuck with me. It feels kind of accurate to me. Is when you have a consecrated ancestor shrine and you put pictures of living family on it, it's as if you're saying that they're dead or they're in a different status than they are. And so it's just my habit to ritually acknowledge or maintain or reinforce, if you will, that distinction between those who are incarnate and those who are not. And but I don't want to create a dogma around it. More importantly is the distinction between a family remembering spot and an actual consecrated ancestor shrine. Like, I have a ton of pictures of my family. I've done research about our roots and all that. And my ancestors don't really want them out. I'm like, really? Damn. Are you just going to let those pictures sit in a box? And they're like, at least to my people, this would be different for other people. They're like, we're not those people anymore. We relate with the ancestors in the present. They're here. They're right now. So my grandma Howell, she is and isn't who she was during life. And And so the pictures can be great, and they can also reinforce a way of experiencing the dead that skews the relationship. Like if I have a picture of my wife when she was in high school, and that's like the main picture I set out, she might be like, dude, this is a dorky picture. Like this is me, relate with me in the present. And so that's another thing about photographs. And a third thing is, so ask them if they want them out. And the most important thing of all of it really is not all the dead are equally well. Dying alone doesn't make you wise and loving and kind. And so if you have a picture of someone who's passed, and especially if it's in a consecrated shrine spot rather than only a family remembering spot, which is good and less ritually dynamic. If you have a picture of somebody and they're not really well in spirit, and it functions as a link to them in spirit, then that might have an undesirable consequence of calling them even more closely into your space. Because until the dead are actually ancestors rather than just not incarnate, then it's not actually ritually helpful, wise, recommended to relate with them. And so the protocol I follow is make sure your people who have passed are actually well-seated, loving, wise ancestors. Once they're in that state, ask them, do you want your pictures out? And they may or may not. And the best way to do it is see what they want and do it the way they like it. So that's my habit on it. And don't be dogmatic about it. You're asking, but I recommend having two different spaces. Yeah, sure. You can have a very ritually simple ancestor shrine and then have a family remembering spot that includes all the pictures and memorabilia and all that. That's one way you could do it. Just want to respect when it's a place to call your ancestors, you're relating with them in the present. And that's the way to go with it. And that they've changed since they were on Earth. So it's good questions. There's a question from Rebecca, who's also reading the book. Do I have thoughts on non-human, or I prefer to say other than human, ancestors? Sure. Yeah, it's a big topic. And if we say other than human ancestors, if we're following the story of blood in particular, then of course we end up dialing it back. Homo sapiens sapiens are about 300,000 years old, so we could dial it back to earlier primates or earlier mammals or, you know, earlier vertebrates, etc. So there's those very ancient ancestors of the last 4 billion years or so of what we consider biological life on this planet. And there's also other kin who are family. Now, would I use the word ancestors for them? Some use the word in a more expanded way like that. For me, I am in the habit of using the word ancestors to refer to the human dead. And so I will tend to refer to ancestors of blood, ancestors of spiritual lineage, ancestors of place, and which you may or may not be connected to by blood. So there are different types of human ancestors. Now, some indigenous cultures, or not indigenous for that matter, will refer to other than humans as grandmother, grandfather. Sometimes that's a term of just relatedness and status. And sometimes what's being communicated is a kind of claiming of position in the lineage of bear or salmon or this or that mountain. And there's a mysticism, if you will, to that, or some deeper mysteries that have to do with the way affinity spirits or other than human spirits become woven into the story of a lineage. And, I'm trying to think of a good example. There's this popular person, Jesus, that in the stories, I guess, what is it? Mary got pregnant from God. Is that how the story goes? I guess. And then, sorry, if Christians are on the call, it's a funny story a little bit. And so there's kind of an other than human lineage there, but I guess Jesus didn't have kids, depending on who you ask. And so there's all kinds of ways in which, in a lot of other cultures, maybe we don't have an easy one to reach for in modern Western culture of humans making babies with other than humans, but it's a very common thing in many cultures around the world. And so that also happens. Short answer is start by really getting to know your human ancestors, because they're probably more magical than you realize, and ask them about your relatedness to the other than humans. And they'll give you a framework for it that's sensible for your life and grounded, and that'll be good. So yes to all those kinds of related, like a last thing on this is we inherit affinities with other than humans through our blood lineages. So if you get to know your blood ancestral lineages, you can also ask them, hey, am I connected to some aspect of the natural world, the other than human world, just by virtue of being born into this bloodline? Be like, you are, in fact, we're fish people or whatever. They'll tell you, ask them. So good. Thanks, Gabriela, or no, for Rebecca for that question. See another question from Gabriela. Sure. You've been feeling a deep call to do this work, not sure where to start regarding training and how to facilitate this for others. So yeah, I mean, without talking to you, I wouldn't facilitate it for others until you're really steeped in it yourself. Maybe you know that, but it's worth saying. And in terms of where to start, you know, I'm biased, but I have trained people in how to guide ancestral repair work. And there are, I think, 11 people certified in that and another 20-some still getting their hours. And that's on my site. It's ancestormedicine.org. And then just look at the practitioner directory. And they're really good people. They're solid human beings. A lot of them are therapists. They're culturally sensible humans, so they're not going to be a dumb ass about cultural things that would light you up. And so I recommend them. And I recommend that ancestor work is dangerous. No, really. Take that to heart. Not from a fear-based place, but, you know, so is relationship. So is travel. So is a lot of things in life. But so I'm not saying don't do it, but I'm saying relate with the topic of ancestral engagement with the same level of caution and discernment you would with get naked with other people, for example. There are risks involved. Like, there's a draw to it for a lot of people, but there's also risks. And so there's an intimacy and a complexity and a risk of trouble around it, partly because we're, for the most part, not raised with a framework to navigate those kinds of relationships. And so if you go into the topic of invoking your ancestors without any discernment or framework for it, then it's not that different from like dating when you're a teenager. Hope it turns out well, but you don't have a framework for it, so could look all kinds of ways. So maybe it's not the best metaphor, but do a few sessions with people. And at the risk of being self-promotional, like, check out the book. I tried to write it in a really sensible how-to way, and it's field tested. It comes out of 15 years of experience guiding others in the work. And so at least up front, reach out for support. Don't assume that you would know it. If I'm like, oh, okay, Gabriela, like, you get to perform playing the piano in 6 months, you wouldn't be like, well, damn, I just need to sit down with this piano and figure it out. You'd be like, hey, who knows how to play the piano? And so in that way, give this aspect of spiritual practice the same consideration that you would any other skill that is learnable. So, and thanks for asking. I hope that lands well and isn't too snarky. I know I can't see you, so thanks. There's a question from Kimberly, and I see other questions are coming in, which is great. I will chew through them as they're coming in. Kimberly's saying, you've traced back your lineages to places in Europe some good ways back, feel connected to certain areas in the UK, and didn't know until recently you had people there. And some ancestors call more than others to you. Can you connect with those ones to learn more of their story without having other information other than their name and date of birth? You, of course you can. My recommendation, I'm not into relating with individual ancestors that much. Now hear me out on this. This may be a little bit surprising or something. I find that the way of thinking about ancestry in the West, partly because our cultural framework for it, generally speaking, I'm kind of generalizing a little bit about white people, but not only, the cultural framework has been smashed into little bits. And so we're making shit up. Not a bad thing necessarily, but there's a risk of having an incomplete approach. And so because of that, we tend to frame ancestors as especially focusing on individuals and on the recent dead, the remembered dead. And the recent dead include these last 700 years. And a more traditional approach, or at the very least an approach that is how I come at it, is the ancestors also include the much more ancient ones, and it's beneficial to think of them as lineages or groups of ancestors, not only individuals. And so the single most important criteria when you're seeking to relate with someone who's not incarnate anymore is, are they deeply well in spirit? Are they loving, wise, kind, etc.? And if they are, it's almost certain they're going to be networked in with other wise, loving, and kind ones. And so the dead who are well, the ones who are true ancestors, tend to function as a group energy or a group consciousness. And that's the way that I approach it, is asking people to get to know older, much older usually, ancestors along their bloodlines, and to come into relationship with them, and groups of ancestors really, and to partner with them to make sure that the more recent dead, the remembered ones, including deceased parents or children, that the more recent ones are deeply at peace, so that the entire lineage is healed and you can relate with the lineage and yourself as an extension of the lineage in an easeful way without risk or danger so much. So if, Kimberly, you were really intent on connecting with certain ancestors whose names you have, I guess a harm reduction model would say connect with other guides and powers that you deeply trust and know already, and ask them if any given ancestor who you wish to contact is deeply well and at peace. And if they're not, don't interact with them at this time. If they are, then have a mediated interaction. But you want to ask, so what's the intention of it? And the intention I usually come with is healing up the ancestral lineages so that you can have even more clarity about your life purpose, your destiny, and be a boss at that, be effective at that. So I hope that lands okay. So a bit of a sideways answer to your question, but thank you for bringing it. I'm going to keep moving here because other questions are coming through. Any thoughts on using photos of headstones instead of photos of people? Oh, yeah. I mean, you could. Let your people inform whatever is good for you. Some people, I don't know the tradition that well, but there's a Chinese tradition of using tablets with names on them. It reminds me of that a little bit. And ask your deeply well and wise ancestors what they would like. The most important thing is the relationship. I'd rather see somebody have like a house plant as their ancestor shrine than somebody else have a big ass fancy shrine and no actual relationship with them. So whatever serves to have the relationship be dynamic and loving and kind of potent, right? Go with that. But yeah, that's it. You could do that. Whatever they show you is okay. There's a question from Aubrey. I'm new to this work. How do I tell the difference between ancestor and angel? Sure. I think you just asked them. I have the impression that some, I mean, I'm not working personally from a paradigm that focuses on angels much per se, although I recognize they certainly do exist in the universe. And I think you just ask them, I guess. The thing about the ancestors is you could think of different kinds of beings as having certain medicine, certain gifts or qualities. Like if you want to know about the ocean and mysteries of the ocean, talking to whale might be a good move. You're not going to get a lot on that from coyote, or you might, but you got to review it. And if you want to know about human experience, then the ancestors are masterful at that. They've lived and moved through so much about what can happen as a human being here. And so the medicine of the ancestors, they're like the collective love and wisdom and challenge and unresolved burden of the human species. And so that's their kind of magic, is human magic. The angelic realm, that's a different kind of terrain. And so I'm sure there's stuff around prayer and devotion and creational energy and fire and protection and all kinds of kick-ass angelic things that are a little bit different than ancestor things. So, but yeah, you just ask them. They'll tell you. Good. From Chelly, what do I feel the difference to be in time? What do you typically feel to be the difference in time for our time to determine when they've hit the ancestor point, or is it individual? I think you're asking, Chelly, how do I know when someone has actually become an ancestor rather than a ghost or someone who's more troubled? So I'm going to take you off mute. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, that is.
Yeah, okay, good. I work with a kind of funny, it's a little dramatic in that way, ancestrally too. They have like Pennsylvania Dutch ancestry. A 1 to 10 scale. So the 1 to 3 are the really ghosty, funky, toxic, man, do not want it around you, kind of dead. And 4 to 6 are the regular ghosts, the ones who are like, hey, I died and not sure what now. And the 7 to 10 range, if we're talking just level of wellness, those are the ones I consider true ancestors. They would be okay around the kids. They could visit you at night when you're sleeping and it wouldn't feel weird. They are basically safe and benevolent. They might be rowdy. They might have opinions, but there's not a sense of like, that was off around them. There's a sense of fundamental connectedness. They get that they're dead, all that. And so for me, that 7 or above is the tipping point where I say, yeah, it's okay to relate with them directly. Everything else, I don't want to focus on them. I don't want to relate with them directly. Like, even this is my day job. Like, I train people on how to do this, and I don't relate directly with ghosts. It's not needed. I ask the well ancestors to handle it. People who have long careers in ritual work are intentionally, strategically lazy, and they delegate work to the spirits who know how to handle it. And so that's, I'm all about the easiest way to get the best results. And practically speaking, you ask your trusted powers, is this one safe and well and deeply at peace and networked in with otherwise loving, kind energies? And either it's going to be a clear yes, or it's not yet there. Anything other than a clear yes is not yet there. So I want you to have a high bar about that. And because there are so many among the dead who are fantastic and happy to relate. So if you're not finding that with your recent ones, go to your older ancestors. They're available in the present, in the moment. So, yeah, so have a high bar about it. Trust your gut and ask other trusted powers. Good. Question from Michael. Thanks for hosting the call. Could I share information that I know or have experienced around songs, singing, and ancestors, singing songs of our ancestors? Yeah, do it. If you inherit songs, that's a gift. I didn't get that. My people have been in the States for at least 4 generations and every bloodline. So as someone who's English, Irish, German, settler, colonizer, ancestor, ancestry in North America, should have spent 1,000 years on most lineages since there was any kind of traditional songs. Anything is really ritually dynamic, probably. And even longer than that along some lineages. So some of it's been smashed into little bits, and depending on where your people are from. Some of it can be sought out. Like, I could learn songs in German or in Old English or Irish. I've learned a teeniest little bit of Gaelic in order to try to, or Irish in order to try to activate some of that. And, work with what you got, root around for new stuff if you can do it, but don't let the learning and perfectionism delay the intimate, direct communing with your people. That's the main thing. sometimes people get, I don't know you, I'm not saying you're doing this, but sometimes people can get kind of performative or, I don't want to reduce it to just posturing, but it's like the sense that you need to relearn these ancient languages or you need to do that in order to relate with your ancestors. And sometimes my impressions of ancestors are like, for fuck's sake, could you just sit your ass down and tune in? We have all the stuff to tell you. You do not need to learn Irish for us to tell you. Just like sit down and let us talk to you. And so, and sometimes they're like, we'll teach you songs. You want songs? We'll teach you new songs. Send them a song in a dream. Damn, he didn't remember it. Okay, try it again. Whatever. So the main thing is just to come into relationship, like in a strong, tangible, until it's so tangible way. And then let your ancestors guide you about how to act on your calling to sing. So if you can act on that calling from a place of already connected to them, that's the best way to go at it. Because we could die today. It's, time's precious. So don't waste time with them. That's all. And sing it up. Absolutely. Good. There's a question that doesn't show up in the chat, but from someone whose name is Wood. When my mother tongue differs from the mother tongue of my ancestors, trying to get translations of the prayers, those resources aren't available. I fall back on English. How can I clarify my intentions with them? What do I do to clarify the channels of communication if language is even an issue? I don't think it's an issue so much. They'll get it. Do your best with the language, but don't let it be an area of disconnection. It's like the spirits can read our emotion and our heart and our intent. And I mean, it's a question I get a lot, but really your people aren't going to be like, well, damn, you don't speak Mandarin. We can't relate. Now, but if you have it, you can drop a little Mandarin in the mix and that's the language they spoke, then boom, it's dynamic. It's exciting. They like it. But if you don't have it, you do your best. Given what I encourage people to do, the people I train and mentor, is like get a few lines at least of an ancestral language. So assuming this language, whatever it is for you, is still spoken, you could have someone translate grandmothers, grandfathers, I miss you, I love you, I remember you, greetings. And get it so you don't sound silly, and like have someone record it who speaks the language, and take that to heart and lead with that, and then be like, all right, now we're going to talk in English. That's fine. So open with a few lines. It really shifts up the energy in a nice way. Even if it's like a common language or like whatever, French, something that people are already speaking. So pepper in the older languages, but don't let it slow you down. And great. Question from Daniel. Thanks everybody for the questions. I'm going to just keep chewing through them. You said you mentioned earlier your ancestors converted in Europe to Mormonism and came in the early 1920th century. You feel conflicted about and annoyed about their religion, at the same time connected to it. In Mormonism, there's ancestor rituals, which are a little funky, but funky awesome both. Not your words. How would you recommend working through that cognitive dissonance? I don't want to disrespect their decisions, but at the same time, I'm not in alignment with the religion. Is part of ancestor work dealing with the decisions of your ancestors? Yes. Yes, it is. And one thing not to do is act from an all or nothing, black and white thinking kind of place. It's a function of colonialist damage. It's a function of psychological wounding to be rigid or all or nothing about stuff. And so my recommendation is to get to know your more ancient ancestors who lived well before Joseph Smith, who lived well before the rise of Roman Empire that shattered many of the indigenous traditions of Europe. Get to know those more ancient strata of your ancestry and just come into relationship with them and just like listen with them. And let their love and kindness towards you into your psyche and heart and space. And from that place, then revisit your question with them. They'll have things to say on it. And they'll probably, I would guess, they might say something like, yeah, love your people, respect them, respect what's good about the tradition you were raised with, recognize that it's an incomplete system, and you don't have to reject or accept it. You just work with your ancestors directly, and they'll guide you with it. A lot of people code switch and come in and out of different religious spaces. Being in Yoruba land in West Africa, I also lived in North Africa at a period of time when I was practicing Muslim. And but that was, it was years ago. So I go back and forth to Nigeria now. And last time I was there, or a couple times ago, one of the initiates in our ritual space is Muslim also. No problem. Both and. And so I'm chatting in Arabic with him about Quran, and so there's a fun kind of like, oh, we're both also Muslim. Fun. Oh, yeah, okay, let's get back to the ritual. And so a lot of people will hold multiple religious affiliations comfortably. And that's a skill that's especially prominent outside of the United States and North America, because a lot of people hold, it's like you have a couple different operating systems you're comfortable in. So consider a both and outcome on that too. So thank you, Daniel. It's a good question. And thanks for calling in. Scrolling down from Tamara Murray, saying you're a family therapist and you began to experience recurring energy patterns that were traumatic through the generations. As the work continued, it seemed that there were energetic predators that feed on family traumas. I felt the necessity to learn more about this tradition and the cross-cult traditions of shamanic exorcism. Does that make sense? Or is it your experience that trauma can create more trauma? Oh yeah, there's all kinds of beings. Look, any kind of trouble you see in the world, whether it's currently, let's say in the United States, the racist, sexist, xenophobic clusterfuck of our government that separates families and causes a bunch of damage, or the corporate powers that eat the earth and just disrupt indigenous cultures or whatever. Look at all the trouble happening in the world. There's a lot of trouble. And all of that has an unseen or a spirit reflection or complement or energies underlying it, because it's just one world. There's not like a spirit world and a physical world. It's one world. And it's weird and it's more bendy than it looks. And so whatever crazy, deadly, problematic intergenerational troubles you're aware of in this dimension, you can assume it's that troubling in spirit. Are there energies that become woven into a lineage that are associated, let's say, with sexual abuse and incest or with addiction? Yeah, absolutely. People who have experienced those kinds of traumas, not always, but often, will report, speaking, let's say, of physical or sexual abuse. And so, and like, you take care of yourself if it, if even speaking of it lights you up, but it's important to name it. I'm also a therapist and respecting that background that you bring in tomorrow. So in situations like that, when someone is acting really harmfully in a boundary transgressing way toward another, not always, but often there's a sense that some other than human, or other than that human at least, energy is also working through them, that you're having a harmful contact with another kind of energy in addition to the human that has harmed you. And so there's a kind of almost energetic pollution, or a way in which you're having contact with a really unsavory thing. Yes, that happens. Validation. And there are ways to address it. There are ways to heal that up. Be hopeful about being able to heal it up. But if you have directly experienced or have intuitively sensed that there are dangerous, creepy, problematic kinds of energies that get associated with ancestral lineages, oh yeah. And like, open the newspaper, they're on the move. Like, not to be all whatever reptilian agenda about it, but there's a bunch of bad, hateful stuff that is eating up the beautiful, delightful, innocent soul of humanity and the earth. So time to push back on that and reclaim ground. So, and human ignorance and trauma, I don't mean to conflate those two, but human ignorance and unhealed pain that isn't being worked with is plenty to create fresh harm. Sometimes just laziness and an unwillingness to look at your own stuff is plenty to do, to be fatal. So there's not actually like a big demon behind it. Sometimes just people being lazy shits. So both. You be grounded about it, but and those other than human things that eat up the goodness in the world, they're just doing their thing too. I'm not saying they're evil. They're just their intention with our desire to have a safe, loving world. So good. I'm gonna respectfully skip over some folks who I've already seen questions from, just to get to some of the ones that I haven't spoken to yet, and then I'll circle back if needed. I see one from Mark. I'm going to scan it. Had a kind of Kundalini experience years ago. Worked with some teachers since. It sounds like a more personal thing you're describing. And so I would say to connect with a practitioner who, and send me a personal email if you want. If you're actually willing to do sessions and pay for somebody's time with it, then in a not just a one session way, but like an ongoing kind of way, send me a personal email, describe a little bit more about it. I can make a recommendation to somebody. And is the kind of energy that you contact, that one contacts in a spiritual opening, potentially dangerous? Oh yeah, totally. And not all spiritual openings go well. Not all rituals have good outcomes. And in general, getting to know your own lineage ancestors will strengthen and fortify your energy body and help you to be more able to safely relate with other than human powers like lightning and oak trees and bear spirits and stuff like that. And it's tricky. The more potency, I guess, more spiritual energy or whatever you want to call it, that you're running through your system, the more humble and psychologically worked through you need to be to not become an annoying person. And there's a real risk that if we just focus on intensity, I'm not saying you're doing that, Mark. And also sometimes big openings, spiritual openings come and nobody, you're not looking for it. You're walking along and then your energy body's blown open and you can't even function for a while. So sometimes it happens like that and is destabilizing. And there's no guarantee it turns out well. So getting, like, making sure we're doing as much of our psychological healing and inner work, so to speak, as possible. That's awesome. And again, not suggesting, I mean, I don't know you, Mark. All I have is your first name. But I'll say that I've met a lot of people who have genuinely been cracked open to the spirits, but who haven't necessarily healed past trauma. And so it's not actually, the openness isn't actually doing them any favors. There's a need to heal up the trauma in a real, in almost like a straightforward, like healing childhood stuff kind of way, which can decrease the intensity at times usefully for a period of time until we're able to integrate it more. And so it's hard. Humans need a lot of fucking work. Like we do not automatically turn out well. And the, culture, like people sometimes ask me, well, what happened? Why are we so ill-behaved and what got off track? And I don't know. I mean, how am I supposed to know? But my best go at it is we actually need a lot of work and a lot of like cultural grooming and support and encouragement and accountability and connectedness and discipline and all kinds of stuff in order to turn out well. And if any of those systems breaks down, let alone intergenerationally, and we're not living in accountability with the land and ancestors and one another, we turn out wrong. and we start being mean to each other and get away with it. And then it kind of can spiral out from there. So part of what is needed, and it's tricky because it's slow work in a time when things are really accelerated, is culture building, cultural repair, and to create new, healthy, grounded cultural forms. And that takes a lot of commitment and anchoring and steadiness to do that. So, but yeah, it's a very general answer to your question, Mark, but I would need to know a little more to say more, but thank you for speaking up and feel welcome to reach out directly. Okay. Give me one sec. Just looking for, okay, more questions. Others feel welcome to ask questions as well. And please type them in the chat, or if you have a way to, you could take it off mute if you had a question. And I'm going to keep scanning my email a little bit to see if others come in, just make it clear in the subject line there. And I'm going to go back to some of the questions I scanned over. Somebody's asking, is it possible to go through spontaneous initiations by the ancestors in altered states, like in a dream? Yeah, sure. It's possible. I tend to use the word initiation in a more conservative way, because to me, it's like a communal, people use it to mean spiritual opening or a kind of download of a spiritual gift or some kind of spirit thing. And I'm not saying you can't use it in that way, of course, but to me, it tends to have more of a communal, like priesthood implication, or perhaps rites of passage implication. And so it's something that happens in community. That's been my experience, at least in West Africa, and also being around Native circles and in other traditions, that initiation is almost, it's conferred by the spirits, but it's also communally conferred, ideally. But yeah, ancestors or others can come in your dreams and light your shit up so much, or during waking time, they'll make something happen. And the important thing is that what you do with it. Because when every time you level up, let's say they really do come and they're like, bam, you got an energetic promotion. Your energy body is different. We just up the voltage on it. What will probably happen is your life will be destabilized. Certain people will leave your life. Others will come into your life. And you'll probably be spun out for a minute until you know what to do with your bad self, because you just got reorganized. And if you don't have support or a framework for it, it's going to be harder than it needs to be. And so if things like that happen, it's important to reach out to folks who can be allies and how to navigate it. And it can totally happen spontaneously. It happens a lot that way because we don't... traditional rites of passage especially are, they think of them like controlled detonations or controlled burns in a way, because if we don't have that, then it tends to happen spontaneously anyways. Like the ancestors, the spirits, whatever, will catalyze life events that turn our situation upside down. Now, if you can report to, you know, a month or even a week or whatever of intense ritual, it's a way of intentionally signing up for that, so it doesn't have to come sideways at your life. And so go willingly, it'll be easier. Good. Let's see, other questions, keep them coming. And just scanning for the back ones as well. Welcome, Oshumilaya. Good to see some Yoruba name here. To Kimberly's question, do I recommend going to older ancestors first that we don't have personal or individual information about? I do, and not in a dogmatic way, but look, I'm going to generalize when I say we. I know there's people from other parts of the world and other cultural backgrounds. United States even is diverse, but I'm going to say we for a minute. And we meaning folks who are not raised with an intact framework for ancestor reverence and ritual. So of whatever ancestry, if that describes you, that's who I mean when I say we. So we come into this situation where the family ancestry hasn't been taken care of. And so it's not safe to assume that your recently deceased people are inherently deeply well in spirit. They may or may not be, because traditionally rituals would ensure that that was taken care of. So they may or may not be safe yet to relate with, although that can be addressed if they're not yet well. And a way of addressing that risk is to go to when I say go to the older ancestors, what I'm really saying is start by connecting with the last point on any given bloodline when those ancestors were deeply well in spirit and actively tending to the relationship with the living, between the living and the dead while they were on earth. So when was the last time these awarenesses were intact in your family? For some people, it might be a few generations back. For people who, let's say, arrived in the Americas through the history of slavery, maybe it's between 2 and 350 years ago. For people who arrived through the settler process of Europeans, maybe it's 1,000, 1,500 years ago. In terms of the ancestral disconnect, I'm generalizing here, white people are the most messed up about it. And it's part of the reason that European ancestor people have inflicted such tremendous damage on the other than European and internally, for that matter, world over the last 500 plus years, is because there's such a buildup of ancestral trauma that gets barfed onto the rest of the world. But just to remember that that trauma was building for hundreds of years before it got exported so painfully onto other people. So go to the older ones, but what the functional important part is to go as far back as you need to connect with ones who are already super well in spirit. Like, they're well before they died on earth, because along every single bloodline of everybody on the call, you have ancestors like that, and they are able to be accessed in the present. They're not really in the past. That's not really how it works with the ancestors, because they're, as long as they're alive, they're still relating or capable of relating. So good. There's no other questions right now, I don't think. Let me scan back. So keep them rolling in, folks. Can I define well? I say well in spirit a lot. I do. I spoke to you a little before, but you know, like this question from Michael, if I'm hanging out and somebody just came up and talked to you for 10 minutes and I saw it and I come over and I'm like, what's up with that person? Are they cool? Like, do they seem like they're all right? You would know, you'd have a sense. Like, some of it is a gut level, like, is this person well? But beyond that, qualities I associate with well are connected up to other well, loving, kind, wise, compassionate, safe energy. So there's a sense of group consciousness. Ghosts tend to be isolated. They tend to be more individual. And the wellness is, it can also include cultural wellness around issues like, we say, racism, sexism, colonialism, etc. The dead can culturally change as well. The ones who acted terribly during life don't necessarily always carry those biases into spirit, and they can shift actually and become important allies in beneficial cultural healing and change in the present. I don't think that automatically happens, but it absolutely can happen. The dead change. They're not frozen in form. That's critically important in how we approach them. And so, well is a lot of things, but networked in with other kind and connected folks. It doesn't even have to mean they're loving. It can look a lot of ways. There's lots of flavors of well, but you instinctively know the difference. That's a short answer. And we could say a lot, but that's a short riff on that. And I see a question Kimberly circling back to is, can I share a few basics on how to start communicating with ancestors? Yeah, sure. And there's a lot in the book about this, and I'm not trying to dodge the question, but it's a big question, so whatever I say, it's just a partial answer. For one, make a very clear intent that you only wish to relate with those among your ancestors who are wise and loving and kind and good for you to relate with. And that any among them who are other than that, respectfully, may they be anywhere other than your personal space. So you're saying all of the ones among the dead who I'm connected through blood and bone and body, who are just like awesome and sweet and smart and good for my life, I welcome you to come around. I'm open to being in relationship with you in a way that's good for me. And everybody else, may you get what you need, but not be up in my body and up in my personal space. Just that stance is quite important, because you're, from the start, leading with discernment. The next thing is to consider if you want to add the kind of structure to it. Like, I wish to connect with well energies on my mother's 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 lineage or mother's father's lineage. There can be, what I step people through is a lineage-based approach. And the session work that the people I've trained guide is lineage-based. And so that would proceed through seeking to connect directly with very healed and whole ancestors on whatever the chosen lineage is. And in terms of how, I think you might be asking also not what to do, but how is it experienced? And that can also look a lot of ways, and it has to do with reclaiming our intuitive capacity to relate with the spirits. So that for some people, that's visual. It's like very few people actually see them in the room in a, like, somebody sitting over there kind of way. Some do. Has been my experience. Others will see as if you're seeing a movie with your eyes closed, like a story is appearing. So there's a visual element intuitively. For others, it's audio, like you just hear communications, or there's a body level kind of knowing, or it comes through more through making art or through your dreams or something like that. And you might experience different lineages in different ways. And reclaiming that ability is part of the work. And that's part of repairing cultural damage, frankly. I see ancestor work, not inherently, but at least the way I hold it, is intended to complement work, decolonization work, or healing some of the impacts of the, not just colonialist occupation of people's traditional lands that are not ours, which is terribly bad, non-consensual, boundary-violating behavior, but to heal up a mindset that views living humans as the apex kind of person, when other than human people are critically important and just as legit, like those whose bodies are animals, plants, rivers, and other than incarnate humans, like the ancestors, are also part of our larger community, to whom we're accountable, to whom we're just ethically bound. And so when we reclaim our ability to relate with the ancestors, for example, the not incarnate right now humans, there's an element of cultural damage that is being repaired. And that's good. That people, when they're well connected to their ancestors, are rowdy, earth-loving, justice-favoring, spirited ancestors. They're harder to manipulate and less likely to just you know, self-medicate with shopping and bad TV. And so it's, I know it's kind of a partial answer, Kimberly, but be hopeful, follow up more. I have a ton of free open info on my site, not to be self-promotional, but just to say that it's a topic that's worth expanding into, that I'm only speaking to you partially here, but the channels of intuitive communication vary from person to person. And it's important, if one that you're engaging isn't clicking for you, to not get discouraged, to know that your way of experiencing your people might look a little different. Good. Raquel's asking, when older ancestors appear, how do you discern which bloodline they're from and all that? You can just ask them, and it's not always critically important, but I tend to work from the other approach of saying, all right, I'm going to seek to connect with ancestors from my father's side. Let me approach that safely, systematically. And then when they appear, one of the first questions is, are you an ancestor on this lineage? And if it's a yes, then I'll tend to trust that if that intention has been set from the start and there's an affirmation that comes, that's worth trusting. Yeah. So you can set out to connect with ones in those lineages. Good. I'm just scanning the questions. Thanks, Kimberly. I am glad the question landed okay. And one individual, it's a private message, I won't say the name, says that her daughter's been suffering from anorexia. I know ancestral healing needs to happen, and her symptoms are similar to those of your mother who died of cancer, but she's reluctant to do spiritual work. Can I undertake ancestor work and clear energy on your behalf? Yes, you can, and in the nicest, most non-presumptuous way, you totally should. Yes, do it. If you have children, anybody who has children, it's a gift to them to clean up the ancestral trouble. The ancestors who are not yet well, the ghosts, they eat the living. They reside in the body of the living often and eat through the living. And it sounds like a grim metaphor, and it's not only a metaphor. And the dead who have no bodies and have not left, and so have not yet really finished dying, such that they haven't become an ancestor yet, are exiled, they're orphaned or stuck here in a sense. And so they're left to draw energy from whatever they know, whatever is familiar, and that's us typically. And it's not evil. It just is. If you were a ghost, you would eat your family members too. It is a really suck condition to be in. And it's totally addressable. And good funerals and death rites in traditional cultures all over the world are designed to make sure this doesn't happen. And because we're not very good at doing funerals, let alone living ethically. I'm generalizing. Some people are ethical, of course, but our culture is a little jacked up. Come on. And because we don't do a lot of those things, we don't take care of them. And when people die, we don't spiritually move in and really handle it if they lived a messed up life. Then you end up with a ghost problem. If I have to, I think there's about, 250,000 people a year die in the United States. And I would guess, let's be so generous and say 2/3 of them become a well-seeded ancestor within a year of their death. Like they're really wise and loving and safe to relate with. I really don't think it's more than that, as being generous. And that means 800,000 new ghosts a year, per year. And let's say a quarter of them are really like funky, heavy, troubled, ghosty ghosts, like creeper ghosts. That's 200,000 of them a year. That's a lot. That's a lot of funk that we're moving in. And so you can totally address that. It's healable. Well, I don't want to be too cavalier about the condition you shared, the individual posted, but you I will say with certainty that you absolutely can, without so much effort, make sure that all of the ancestors before you, including your mother, if she's passed, I think she probably has from what you said, are deeply well in spirit if they're not already, and that they're resourcing your daughter and pulling for good outcomes. And you can do the same work even for the father of your daughter. So message me personally and be hopeful about that. Should you handle it? Seriously, I'm saying that as a therapist too. It'll help. Yeah, thanks. It's a vulnerable question. I appreciate it. Good. Do I relate with other than humans as ancestors? Not exactly. I don't really. In general, I see the ancestors are... I associate ancestors with humans. Like Raven is its own, I was going to say deity, but big spirit. And so the Raven has a Raven ancestors, but I don't, other than humans have other than human ancestors, put it that way. I see myself as human. That's kind of where that comes down to. I think it's adaptive and useful for me to see myself as a human. So that's how I hold that. And they're kin. They're relatives. So it doesn't, they don't have to be ancestors. They're just their family. Good. But that's how I prefer to talk about it. If people want to study me with me in a training capacity, what's the first step? Yeah. It's an online course, is a way to do it. And I'm going to be doing a course with the Shift Network at some point. So that's kind of fun. And I just got asked to do that. I don't know if I should announce it. Oops, too late. But the online course that starts in December in ancestral lineage healing is quite thorough, and it's got 14 lessons and kind of unlimited tech support, meaning you can ask me anything at any time. We have live conferences, and it parallels the book. So the book and the online course are where it's at. Beyond that, if you're willing to do it, connect with people for sessions. Session work is the most efficient way to just dive in with all this. So go to the website, and then it's under the directory, practitioner. So there's about 30 people right now, and it's diversely ancestor people. There's trans, queer people, people of color, some indigenous people, and it's not to be like performative about that, but I'm saying there's genuine diversity among the practitioners. And a lot of options for low-income sessions if cost is a barrier for you. So the one-on-one work is a great way to dive in. And that can be done at distance just fine, because it's people stepping you through relating with your own people. They're not tuning into your ancestors for you. They're just guiding you in how to do that yourself. So dive in like that. I trust all of them. My bandwidth is focused on mentoring those 59 people who are in the first three cohorts of the ancestral healing practitioner training that I guide. So I've stopped for the most part, except for Ottawa in August. I'm stepping back from guiding 3-day trainings, which is the public facing training in North America, so that I can do that in other places like Australia in April. And then if anyone wants to invite me to Europe, please do that. And sorry, it's true though. And others that I've trained are guiding those trainings in the US now. But just reach out personally and I'll get you details. I don't want to self-promote too dramatically here. Question from Erica. Families from West Africa, from Cape Verde and Senegal. In the beginning stages, but learn about Yoruba spirituality and feel that relationship with Yemoja has been calling. Is it important to build a relationship with ancestors in your lineage before working with Yemoja? It's kind of a both and. It's my bias, but I come from a West African orientation to Yoruba tradition. There's also Brazilian and Cuban and Olutunji and Oyutunji, sorry. There are different lineages of practice, even within Yoruba tradition, let alone Vodun and so many other West African things that are differently wholesome. But from my own bias and from what I've learned about Yoruba tradition, it is good to get solid with your own ancestors all along the way, because you want their blessing and backing for what you're undertaking. And they'll help you, they'll protect you, they'll guide you, they'll guide you to the right people. And you want to learn how to do work with your Ori, with your own inner light, your own inner divinity. We say that Ori, Ifa, your mother, your father, your destiny, that those things are Isheshe. And Isheshe is more important than any Orisha. Yemoja is a beautiful Orisha, and she's fantastic, and a river goddess in West Africa, and gets associated with the open sea in the Americas. But that's Olokun in Yoruba tradition, is a goddess of the ocean. But we say Isheshe, or traditionalism, comes before the Orisha. And traditionalism includes honoring your family and your specific destiny and your own inner divinity. So that gives you the strength and the bearings and the resilience to be able to relate with the Orisha in a way that is life-affirming and good and not too overwhelming. So it's a both and, but yeah, that's my bias. Get awesome with your ancestry first. They'll see you through everything, and then they'll pick you up when you're dead and be like, good job. Good to see you again. So thanks, Erica. Be hopeful about all that. And let me know if I can be a resource, send an email or something. Got some other questions. It's good. We got about 20 minutes. So give me a sec here. Is the phenomena of the dead in the fairy or other world only a British Isles thing? Or are there parallels elsewhere? How does that affect lineages and relationships? I'm not sure exactly what you mean by it, but most cultures that I've had the good fortune to learn from or have spent time with recognize that there's kind of an ancestor realm, or the land of the dead, or that, like, a not necessarily a different place, because it's also here, but it's like a different dimensionality where the dead are. And sometimes that's associated spatially with in the earth or in the heavens or in a mountain or something, and sometimes not. But there's a functional our world and their world thing that's pretty darn cross-cultural, but they intersect. They're like two overlapping worlds with lots of points of contact. And at any moment, the dead can speak through this dimension, or we can speak in their dimension. So because we have a similarity of form, the relationship between the living and the dead is really porous. It's so different if we're going to talk about the spirit of lightning. Like, sure, I have electrical fire running through my body. This call is mediated through the electrical fire, through the wires and the technology. So in a sense, what we think of as the spirit of lightning or electricity is close. And as something about ancestors, it's just like what we're made of. It makes it tough to have boundaries with them, which is annoying when they're not well. But when they are well, it means that we can flex a little on our individuality and feel really well resourced and helped by them. So there's a lot that's cross-cultural about the ancestors. Not always, but there's a lot of it. So let me leave it kind of general like that. The date of the online course has changed. It got moved to begin in December. Everything else is the same about it. It was going to begin in October. It got moved back because there's going to be a course through the Shift Network from October to early December, and I didn't want to overlap the two. But everything else is the same. So thanks for that question, Rebecca. There's a question, is it helpful to understand that by working with the ancestors, we're also working for the benefit of all beings everywhere? Sure, it's good. Be a bodhisattva. Like, yeah, it's good to be loving like that and to hold that intention. It's not selfish to cultivate yourself, because if you want to be of service, you need to have something to give. You can be generous, but it's even better to have something to give. And if you haven't cultivated yourself, you're not going to be that useful. So if you handle your own family and inherited trauma, for some people, that's fucking huge. That's a big thing. If you come from a family, it's just like you didn't get a drop of love as a child. And and the first time you encountered it in your 20s, it made you so confused you didn't even remember your name. Like, you come from that background, you can talk about all kinds of other kinds of privilege and all that, but you come from a background of emotional disadvantage, and that's super real. And if you overcome that, that's epic. And so handle your family and cultural wounding that is just in your lap because of your who you are and what position you're in culturally. And that's the groundwork from which to then engage in service in a more outward way. Not that it's so linear, but I'm saying you got to also be doing that as you go, or else we'll bypass the trouble that's sitting right with us. Good. Thanks. Lots of other good questions here. So we have about 15 minutes. So I'm going to keep going through them. Question from Britt. How can I address a family trauma? Mom committed suicide when you were 9. Kindness on that. When no one in the family has the capacity to even talk about her or even hold sacred space when we're together, let alone help me deal with the collective trauma. Most of the direct family members have no framework for anything. So here's, it's kind of a straightforward answer on the ritual front. If you can, connect with somebody else for this, because it's edgy work to do solo. But if you're determined to do it solo, come up with the $20 to get the books with the how-to steps on it. But even if you're not going to do that, and you're just going to listen to what I say for the next minute and a half, seek to connect with much older, deeply well, wise, loving, kind grandmothers on your mother's 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 lineage. Call them into your space. Get to know them. Love them. Know that there are deeply healed ones, even if it's been 1,000+ years since your ancestral mother's people on that lineage actually took care of the ancestors during life. If you dial it back far enough, there are ancestors who will respond. Come into relationship with them first. Then, full stop. Then ask them to heal up all the lineage that comes after them through to include your mother's mother without focusing at all on your mother yet. So make sure your grandmother and all the women on back before her are deeply well. Only when that's the case, then ask your grandmother and all the women before her on back to the ancient witchy, magical, totally interesting grandmas. Ask them as a collective to receive your mom and make sure she is now deeply well in spirit. When that's happened, your grief will feel different because you're not trying to grieve her into wellness. She's already well. My grandpa shot himself, my dad's dad, and it happened a little bit like that. I mean, I had to really get in partnership with the ancestors, the men before him well, and then they were able to receive him. Then the whole energy around all of it shifted. And now he's even actually fine that I talk about it. I've checked in with him. But he's like, yeah, I got swallowed by a bigger pattern, by a bigger confusion. And it ended in that way. Sorry. If it helps other people to speak of it, then speak of it. So, and respect, Britt, to all the other psychological and relational and living family layers of it that are hard. But I'm saying that you, in your position, even if no other living family is willing to deal with it, can totally systematically and safely bring about healing of the entire lineage of women before your mother, and then your mother, and actually enjoy a whole different kind of relationship with her in the present once that has happened. But it's a step-by-step thing of rebuilding it. And when there's a big trauma like that, her passing will overshadow the line before her. It's like this trauma that eclipses the older lineage. So, good. Thank you for asking that. And let me just to reiterate it, if anybody on the call is drawn to this, like, I require the people I mentor to offer a certain number of low-income sessions. and to keep the work accessible, just in general, but especially people of diverse backgrounds who have differing means. And all those people are under my supervision. And so seriously, like, be hopeful about it with connecting with somebody. It's easier, at least at the start, to get some one-on-one support. Good. So I see some questions from Yarrow. I'm gonna dodge the constellation one if I can first. I'm gonna go to the other ones. Less constellation work. I'm choosing to. That was my answer. Sorry. I'm choosing to relate to living relatives who deal with unhealed trauma, with altered states, and to a high degree, you feel like they're trying to eat me as ghosts might. Yeah, or the ghosts might be trying to eat you through them. One or the other. Neither seems to want to be accountable or actively healing. Maybe they can't. I'm just scanning here. Yeah, so let me take these last two questions. For living family who are pain in the ass and really unhealed and stuck, the best you can do, I think, is get really well and deeply at peace with the ancestors that are before them, that you share with them. And then when you show up to the interaction with the living people, have those deeply well ancestors who are ultimately the elders of the living people with you and in the field. And so show up with your crew, and they will temper some of the trouble. And the other thing is, respect the depth of the problem, and don't, I was going to say like self-gaslight, but like, don't like dismiss the depth of what you're experiencing, because the cultural map you were given doesn't provide a framework for it. It's as bad as you imagine it to be, as you expect. Trust your experience on it, and that will help you to act accordingly. But if you heal up what's before them, it's possible, not a given, that that could diminish some, their dysfunction, because you're taking away the source, the intergenerational momentum of the dysfunction. Then they're just drinking for themselves and not for 10 generations of ghosts before them or whatever. So it takes a little bit of the momentum out of the trouble. So that's the short version of that. And then, any simple protocols for white people living on colonized land with colonizer ancestors? I give material aid and participate in political organizing, but needed a better way to be in North America. Yeah, well, it's a big conversation for one. And there's some other places and talks where I go into it more, because it's just a conversation that warrants a lot. But I would say, get really deeply well with your ancestors in blood, and actually it's going to, and radicalize them. Make sure they're seated well, but actually let me actually look at this next question, because I think it's related from, I think it's Sabra, that you're balking at the wellness thing. Community's diverse. I don't expect everyone I interact with to be perfect or close to it. We're all screwed up. Everyone has unique gifts to share. And why, basically, is how is it not being judgy for me to say, well? Well, I hear you to a degree on it. And for one, I'm definitely not saying at all, it's not my position at all, is that wellness looks any certain way. So there are many, many different, you could say, archetypal or sacred ways that being at peace looks. I'm not saying you should be unkind toward ghosts. Think of your past relationships, anybody. Like, if you've been in an abusive relationship and a loving relationship, you wouldn't characterize them in quite the same light. You might feel a love and a compassion for your abuser, but there's a difference. You know, we have a child, and if we were to hire a babysitter, I would want someone who's well rather than not well to be with her. And so there is some non-judgy way to try to talk about what is a safe, beneficial energy to be around that's life-affirming, and what is something other than that. Having met really hateful sociopathic energy, I feel clear that there are energies or humans also in the universe who are dangerous people, who are not operating from a place of empathy, and I would rather not be around them. And so there's definitely some gray territory here, but the distinction that I'm really keen on here is ghosts versus ancestors, or the dead who are seated and well, and the other well and the other ancestors who are also seated and in that status can be like, oh yeah, this one is among us. This is a connected and settled energy, compared to one who has died, but whose consciousness has not yet reached the status of ancestor. This distinction is not just found in one culture. There are many, many cultures around the world who engage in ritual practices around the time of death to make sure that the one who's died transitions to successfully join the ancestors. And if they haven't, then there are ways that it gets addressed. And so the, so I, you know, I've heard this, I guess you'd say critique or concern that you're raising, Sabra, about, what is, what I mean by wellness. And I don't mean it from this like awkwardly ableist, there's just one kind of way that well looks approach. But there is, you could think like, would you trust it around the kids? Think of it that way. If you think of it just like that, then that clarifies a lot of it. I wouldn't trust all energies in the world around my daughter. Some are more well than others. So we could think of it as just instinctual soul level. Is it safe and is it healed up or is it not so healed up? And there are lots of ways we characterize it, but there's tremendous diversity within healed up and a lot of reason to be loving toward the not yet healed up energies. So, yeah, and good. I'm going to keep on dodging that constellation question. Bless Bert and all the constellation stuff. All right, now I should say something. I don't know the work that well. And when I say Bert, I mean Bert Hellinger, is a founder of Constellation Work. People hold it in lots of different ways. And so it's at this point, it's hard to generalize because it gets held in lots of ways. For me, I happen to be a psychologist, but fundamentally I'm a ritualist. And for me, the thing about Constellation Work, as it's often described to me, is that there aren't enough safety protocols around the dead who are not yet well. And as a result, people unintentionally or unconsciously are asked to or just do it without anyone catching it, end up embodying the dead who are not yet well, which is very easy to do. And when you do that, that's not good for us. It's problematic. And so there's not enough attention to boundaries and frankly to consent in the way that the work is sometimes held, not always. So I can't speak about how it always is, but that's a concern that's raised for me. And it's one that's validated by people who have reported those kinds of experiences to me. So, and there are some really savvy ritualists who are doing constellation work and addressing those things. So, great. Oh, good, Scott. I hope you're awesome there. Nice to see you chime in. You're welcome. And I'm always happy to hear from you. Yay. Thanks. I was glad to, I enjoyed meeting at HeartPath. And yay, thanks. We're almost at time. Let me see if there's a, that's a great question to end on from Lee. If we're successful in achieving this connection with our ancestors, I would even frame it as if we are successful in bringing more conscious our inherent connectedness to our ancestors. When we die, will we be well already and have an easier time? If we're in relationship with our loving and kind ancestors, our death will tend to go better and our odds of a transition that's smooth will be better. If you're a shit to people during life, you might still have a hard time of it because the best way to become a well ancestor is to be ethical and loving and honest and congruent during life. Because you're training yourself to embody an ethic of interconnectedness and accountability. And when you drop your body and you forget your name and you got to wing it, if you've reinforced a stance of self-serving energy, it just like, you know, being selfish shit, then you're going to feel confused when you die, probably, because you'll be rocked by the kind of nakedness of form and by the having to face others. But if you have cultivated an attitude of accountability and loving responsible behavior toward other people, and especially if you've actually achieved the status of helpful person, then the benefits of that will be the sweet, sweet momentum for you and reverberation. You'll be carried by it. You'll be carried by it. And so most important is to be a good person. And if you carve out direct loving relationship with your healed ancestors, that totally helps too. It really does. But you can not do that at all and be a really ethical, helpful person, and you'll probably be set when you die. Yeah, that's the main thing. Just be good to people. And if you have some other people, be so good to people that people miss you. Because if people miss you, they're going to cry. And if they cry, it's going to help you. The grief helps us to become ancestors. So live in a way that people are sad when you die, and you're going to be, then you'll really be set. Yeah. Good. Thanks everybody for tuning in. I know that there's a bunch of new to me people and people just listening in. So, feel free if you wish to follow up directly. I'll keep recording for a sec. I send out a newsletter with all the summary of all the stuff. It's kind of boring for me to just go through all of it now, but I'll say that there's a book, there's online courses, there's in-person trainings for me or people I've trained, there's session work, there's hours of free talks on the site, and I'm trying to reintroduce these frameworks and sensibilities to the culture. And so be hopeful about your ability, no matter your background, to come into even more conscious and healed relationship with your people in a way that's also good for the cultural healing we need right now and the earth healing. So like that. And if you know folks who would benefit from hearing the conversation, then it'll be up in the archive of past talks by tomorrow on my site. And the best way to be in the loop is just to sign up for the newsletter, which is on the site. And I will, just write that one final time here, say ancestralmedicine.org. And yep, there it is. And I appreciate you all being a part of things. I'm going to stop there.